Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 9th of October. Joining us in just one moment, Peggy Noonan. Peggy, of course, is a Wall Street Journal columnist, a frequent television commentator, a former assistant to President Ronald Reagan, and you see her quite a bit on television during this political time with her thoughtful comments on the race. Last week on Meet the Press, she said, "Some part of me fears they're going to open up the gates of hell during the final 4 weeks of the presidential campaign." We'll talk about that and just so many issues with her. She really says this is an important time in history, in American history, and that there's a great need for us to come together on issues. A lot of the stuff that divides us is just trivial. So she will be with us in just a few moments. Joining me now in our studio is Rhonda Fanning, producer of the program, and it is our fall membership drive. We're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. As you know, listener foundations really are the cornerstone of our budget, and that's why we're asking for you to give your gift right now. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Hello again, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning to you. The sun is shining.
It sure is. And this hour, we have a goal of $3,000. And meeting that goal will help us make this program possible in the months to come. So please make your pledge now online at WPR.org or give us a call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
That is 888-202-2552 for you to join the conversation. And it is a special incentive, and this really is a special incentive. Peggy Noonan is one of our most important writers and thinkers, I believe, on the American scene today. She's author of a book, and she writes as only Peggy Noonan can write. It's a book of grace. She's a beautiful writer. Patriotic Grace, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. She comes from the perspective of a Reagan Democrat, Reagan Republican. There's been talk about Reagan Democrats as well during this race. But she's undecided about who she's going to vote for. She's very concerned about negativity in politics. She's a very thoughtful observer of all that's going on the American scene, and I'm sure you're going to love this book. It's a lovely read. $120, you can receive Peggy's book, and we'll give you the book with our deepest thanks.
That's right. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported. That means one-third of our budget, and I don't think many people know that, but one-third of our budget comes from your contributions. We're coming to you today to ask for your financial support of the programming you love and rely on each day. Make your pledge at WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And a contribution of any amount certainly makes you a member of WPR. I know this is a hard financial time for many of you. Take a moment to think about what Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you, and all the news that we give you are really a lifeline to all that's happening politically and financially these days. We have terrific discussions day after day after day. So think about all of those discussions and then make your pledge of support securely online at WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And pledging is so easy. If you've never done it before, here's how it's done. When you contribute online at WPR.org, you just a couple of clicks, fill in a couple of blanks, and then you're on your way. When you call 888-202-2552, we'll ask your name, address, phone number, and how much you'd like to give. It's that easy. Only takes a couple of minutes.
And then we'll ask how you'd like to pay. You can pay now with a credit card, or we can send you a reminder in the mail. We never sell or trade your personal information, which is good for you to know. That's kept private between you and Wisconsin Public Radio. So that's it. Please go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. And that's all you need to do. And we'll help you make the pledge, and you'll be on your merry way. Listening to public radio, of course, gives you a front row seat to world and national and also state events. All you need is an ear and a radio to learn something new, which we learn every day. We learn all the time. WPR facilitates lifelong learning, and the Ideas Network is tuition-free, actually, and the learning is continuous every day. We need your support to make it happen. Please contribute now online. It's WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552. For any pledge of $120 or more, you will receive the Wisconsin Public Radio member card, which gives you 2-for-1 at some wonderful restaurants and museums all over the state of Wisconsin. And also, we'll give you a copy of Peggy's book, and we're trying to track her right now, down right now, in case you're wondering why I'm going on a little bit. I may as well pledge a little longer. Her book is Patriotic Grace: What It Is and Why We Need It Now. She's also the author of a number of other books. She was an assistant to President Ronald Reagan. Her essays have appeared in Time, Newsweek, and the Washington Post, the New York Times, and many other publications. And the book looks at this being an extremely important and perhaps dangerous time in American history, and it's time for us to stop picking on each other over very small differences and learn to respect each other and come together as a nation. So we're just trying to locate her right now, and once we do that, we will be able to carry on a conversation with Peggy Noonan and, of course, also with you. We'll be welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655. We're just trying to track her down at this moment, and her publicist is evidently calling her right now, so we should be able to find her and get her on the air and have a really good conversation. You know, it's funny, Rhonda and I talk about this, but there are certain people you listen to on the air. I watch a little bit too much television, to tell you the truth, during the political season. And she's one of them. She's a very thoughtful, engaging commentator, I think. And everybody comments, and I believe it's very true, what a lovely writer she is. She's just good. She's very, very good. Very thoughtful.
Kind of in the air of Tim Russert, who we all, I'm sure, are missing during this political season. So keep those pledges coming in as we get Peggy on the line. Again, that goal this hour is about $3,000, and we're about $2,500 away from it. And a pledge of $120 this hour will get you a copy of Peggy's book, Patriotic Grace. And you'll also get that Wisconsin Public Radio membership card, which is good for 2-for-1 entrees in restaurants throughout the state, 2 nights for 1 in bed and breakfasts throughout the state, and I believe 2-for-1 admission into arts and cultural events.
Terrific.
So it pays for itself, and then you'll have a great read, Saving Grace, Peggy's book, in the lead-up to November.
You sure will. Again, make your pledge at 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552 for you to make your pledge today. And I'm sure that we're going to get Peggy on in just a moment. So don't you worry. She will be with us because she'll be here.
I'm not worried.
No.
I have complete faith.
All right. She'll be here. We just probably have a problem with phone connection or something of that order. And when you think about the quality of guests we've had, Peggy Noonan is a big name for you to have a chance to speak with her. We've had so many others and so many wonderful political scientists. Rhonda has made it a point during this political season, during the debates, during the conventions, as you know, to find people who are from the area where these are taking place. And so many of them have been in the audience for these events and have a special perspective. They are our eyes as well as our ears.
So the feet on the ground. That's
exactly
right. A lot of journalists, a lot of political scientists, just a lot of political junkies like you all are. And Kathleen and myself as
yes,
well.
Yes, we are.
So please pledge this hour. Again, that number is 888-202, or you can log on to WPR.org. Peggy is just one example of the many guests we've brought you. It was actually quite fun to go out and follow the primary season and track down people, journalists covering it on the ground in the various states. I think it was the longest primary season that I've certainly seen in my lifetime. Seemed to go on forever, and I guess we're not done. And I think Peggy is calling in now. So again, that pledge number is 888-202-2552, or you can log on during the show so you can keep listening to the program and not get on the phone at WPR.org.
All right, and we believe that she's going to be with us momentarily. We'll just check on this to make sure she is here. She's here? We're finding out. Peggy Noonan should be joining us just momentarily, and we do want to remind you that her book, Patriotic Grace, is our thank you to you this hour, and it is Patriotic Grace, what it is and why we need it now for a $120 pledge. We'll be very happy to send that with our deep thanks for being with us during all of these conversations. We couldn't have this much fun this political season if it weren't for you. We just couldn't. And Peggy's with us now. Hooray. So we'll be welcoming on-air phone calls for her as well. And I'm sure she'd love to speak with you in Wisconsin. So the number on air today is 800-486-8655. Peggy is a Wall Street Journal columnist, frequent television commentator, special assistant to President Ronald Reagan, and author of many books, including What I Saw at the Revolution, A Political Life in the Reagan Era, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness, The Case Against Hillary Clinton, John Paul the Great, Remembering a Spiritual Father, and many other books. And we're just pleased to have her with us this hour, and to talk about her book and to talk about politics. Peggy, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Kathleen, thank you so much for having me on. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh,
I beg your pardon for being late.
That's all right. We're in pledge, so we just ask for more money.
All right. Give this station more money.
That's right.
Please.
Thank you, Peggy. Does anybody call you Margaret? You know, Margaret, I had this Margaret O'Leary aunt, and she was my favorite, and I love that name. It's my favorite name. If I had had a daughter, it would have been Margaret.
But I love it, too.
Do you?
I have no idea. There's only one person who calls me Margaret, and that's Chris Matthews, who is Irish Catholic and knows all Margarets become Peggys. You know, and it just tickles him, and I like it too. I don't know how, by the way, in Irishdom, in the world of the Irish, the name Margaret became a nickname called Peggy. I have never understood that connection. Peggy doesn't sound like Margaret. I've often asked people. Nobody knows. But I was named for my Aunt Peggy, so there you are.
There you
and
go.
She was a Margaret.
You know, I listen to you, though, and read you and look at you and say, she's a Margaret. You know, you're like, I want to call you that. She's a Margaret.
I thank you. I will take that as a compliment.
Let's start with, I love your book. It's just, gee whiz, you're a great writer. I just love it. Taking your teenage son, because so much happened during this in terms of history and in terms of what happened when you were there, your teenage son to Ronald Reagan's funeral.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he was 16, about to turn 17 in 2 days. And I wanted him to witness history. I thought this is a great event. He was also old enough at this point to meet so many people who had been real movers in American history back in the 1980s. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this will be wonderful for him. So I dragged the poor boy along. And, of course, you know, it turned out he witnessed more history than we anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Go ahead.
No, you two go ahead. Just tell us the story.
Well, I'll tell you, this is, let me just back into this
sure.
book a little bit. I cleared the decks and wrote it this summer, the summer we just left.
Mm-hmm.
I did it because I wanted to say one big thing that I had witnessed and thought about that had come to guide all of the work I do, and that yet in my work in a regular column in the Wall Street Journal, I had never been able to clear enough space to speak of. It was this. I was down at the funeral ceremonies for Ronald Reagan in June 2004, and I experienced something that turned out to be pivotal in my life. This is what it is. I had been invited with 100 other members of the Reagan administration to go to the U.S. Capitol to be there as part of a ceremonial delegation that would receive back the body of Ronald Reagan after he had died, brought in from California to Washington, D.C., from California to Washington, D.C., to lay in state in the U.S. Capitol. So I'm there, and I'm with all of, you know, former secretaries of state, George Shultz, Al Haig, just about 100 of us waiting in a little ceremonial room in the U.S. Senate side of the Capitol, when suddenly a guard walked in, and he said, attention, attention, you must evacuate now. And we just looked at him like, what are you saying? What is this? And it turned out we appeared to be under some sort of security attack, the entire U.S. Capitol. We were told to evacuate, and indeed we did. We left the Capitol. There was a lot of running and shouting, and people actually saying, literally, for the first and so far only time in my life, run for your lives.
Oh my gosh.
Run for your lives.
And
incoming.
You're with your son. I'm with my son,
who was cool as a cucumber. As a matter of fact, we had one of those little generational shifts that happened between us. He's 17. I'm not 17. We're walking down the steps of the Capitol as people ran past us, and suddenly I thought, you know, my son might be feeling a little fear here and a little confusion. I think I'll explain the vagaries of history to him as we walk down the stairs.
Oh.
So I start saying, you know, Will, in American history, we have had times of many challenge. And my son looked at me, took my arm and said, Mom, move. You know, it was like, baby, oh, I'm in charge. Move. Oh. And of course he was right. We moved forward. But this is what happened. This was the seminal event for me. We get to the bottom of the U.S. Capitol steps as people are running past us and cops are saying, ladies, take off your heels, run north. I stopped and I turned around and looked up at the U.S. Capitol. And what I saw at the top of the steps was a wonderful woman named Otsi Charles, a grand figure of 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s Washington, D.C., great bipartisan figure of the old Georgetown, friend of Jack and Jackie Kennedy and of Ron and Nancy Reagan. She's in a wheelchair. She had been part of our ceremonial delegation. She's in a wheelchair at the top of the steps, and she could not, of course, make it down the steps. I looked, and I thought, oh, my God, Otsi. And as I turned, up at the top of the steps, two uniformed guards came and calmly picked her up in her wheelchair and carried her down those stairs. She had a cane in her hand, and she held it forward. You know, it was like the prow of a little ship. It was quite a thing to see. She gets to the bottom of the stairs in the wheelchair. We surround her and push forward. Like Americans, we didn't know where to go, but we knew there must be a bar here someplace. So we made it. We actually thought, what's a big, heavy place where you can withstand an attack, maybe? And we thought, Union Station, a few blocks away. Got there, got to the bar. Found out that it was not an attack, it was an accident. The plane carrying a governor going to the funeral had strayed over Capitol airspace and had not responded to warnings. They had no idea they were almost shot down, but that's what that was. And we watched the arrival of the president's body at the Capitol in a big jumbotron in the bar there.
But
and
Otsi
Charles told my son about the first president she had ever seen, which is Franklin D. Roosevelt, go by in a big black car.
But the other thought that strikes you, and we ought to remember this every day, is you're thinking someday, if we're lucky enough to get there, I'll need a couple people to carry me down those stairs.
Yeah. You know what I really thought? I thought this was really a reordering thought for me. As I watched Otsi being taken down, I had this kind of, you know how thoughts sometimes come, not fully as words, as an almost intuition, but it's not even that fully formed. What I thought to myself at that time and in the days after and weeks and months was, before this is over, before the age we are in, the age of weapons of mass destruction, before that age is over, we'll all be helping each other down the stairs.
Right.
Meaning we're going to have to help each other through history, through the next few years and decades. It's going to be a tough rock'em sock'em time. We're going to get through it because we are America, because we have 300 million of us, and we are gifted and strong. But, man, we're going to have to hold together, which means get rid of the old dumb, not smart, but dumb, low partisanship, reflexive partisanship, unthinking politics. We've got to get away from it.
Last week on Meet the Press, you said, some part of me fears that they're going to open up the gates of hell during the final 4 weeks of the presidential campaign. Have they opened them?
I think they are trying to push it open a crack. We'll see how it goes for the next 27 days. I just think that two parties are fighting a brute fight for power. And in the technological reality we live in with the Internet, where anyone, God bless the Internet, anyone can say anything, but woe the Internet. Anyone does. Do you know what I mean? We're living in a time when all sorts of things can be said, and they can be destructive, and they can be small. When we are facing huge things, we look at this economic crisis. It's not just national, which is bad enough. It appears to have deep global implications. We got to be serious here. You know,
right.
One of the things that disappoints me a little bit about both candidates is they seem to be seeing. My sense of how the candidates for president are seeing this economic crisis is It is a political reality to which they must respond for gain or at their loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my goodness, that's not good enough, is it?
Yeah. Right. You were on the Jon Stewart show. You have been many times, of course, but I was interested in what you wrote about in March of 2008. You write you were on the show talking about the election year, and during the commercial, Stewart expressed relief at the bottom line respectability of the likely nominees. You said, yes, it's like the coming year won't be disgusting. It was the only word you could think of, and it startled both of you and made you laugh.
Yes,
and,
you know, we started to laugh.
And at the heart of it, it's true. These are both respectable men. Something's happened to the campaign. But everybody, I think, had the same thought back in March. Good.
Yes.
We're going to have a clean, issue-oriented campaign from respectable men.
Also, I think we were thinking that these – it happens that the system yielded up two men who did not seem by personal inclination – to be guys who wanted to do kind of low politics or nasty politics. Obama seems, in his temperament and character, not to want to go there,
mm-hmm.
you know, to want to keep away from such things. This is, after all, as I always say, this is a guy who took down a political machine without raising his voice. That is a most impressive thing in the Democratic primary. McCain, on the other hand, McCain's lived a long life in politics. He knows how rough it is. But at the same time, he was unjustly and rather wickedly batted around by low politics in the year 2000 in the South Carolina primary. Lots of push polling and stuff was done on him, and it was dirty and not nice. So he has a personal investment in, I hate dirt, and I want to keep it clean. Where do I go after that?
Where do you go? What's happened?
They're both good guys, but they're in, to my mind, but they're in a brute clash in an environment where people will go a little wild, and I fear they will.
Yeah. We'll take phone calls for Peggy in just one moment. And our guest is Peggy Noonan. She's written a wonderful book. She's a lovely writer, Patriotic Grace, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And I must tell you as well, because I want to tell you, that we are in a pledge drive, and for a $120 pledge, we're happy to send you, as our thank you, a copy of Peggy's book, Patriotic Grace, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. The pledge line is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peggy Noonan, our guest, Wall Street Journal columnist, special assistant to President Ronald Reagan, author of Patriotic Grace, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. And we go to your phone call, starting with Pat from Richland Center. Hello, Pat.
Yes, good morning. Peggy, your position that Americans will have to recognize our commonality and the spirit of cooperation to solve these big problems that we face is definitely necessary. With that in mind, after listening to a little bit of the Republican convention, and it was full of us versus them, and I think it ended almost with a chant of fight with me, how could you still be up in the air about who you're going to vote for?
I guess.
Well, I think in fairness, I was at both conventions, and they were both pretty feisty. And feisty is okay with me. Look, we all talk about negative campaigning. If we're talking about, you know, comparing and contrasting, this is what I stand for, but this is what the other guy stands for, and it's not as good. This is my position on this bill. He has the opposite position. Let me tell you why that's the wrong position. All of that stuff is just great. I will tell you that there was a little, I thought, almost a temperament difference in both conventions, however, a subtle little temperament difference. At the Democratic convention, there was so much love for this ticket. You know, there was so much excitement and so much delight towards it. So there was, you know, that's just nice to see in politics. Only once did I run into someone who was a who was rageaholicking, you know, about how dreadful Republicans are. So that was kind of nice. At the Republican convention, very high spirits, a lot of enthusiasm, but also some rote repetition of the enthusiasm of the past. I don't think I can say it better than that. There was something tired around the edges, something rote about it.
So you haven't decided who you're voting for. I heard you say that the other night.
I tell you, I must be. I just read some pollster or political strategist saying everybody's holding on until the end on this one. Everybody thinks everybody else has made up their mind. They haven't. My feeling is, you know what? I'm still watching this thing and trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Watching all of them.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. I know you're not a huge fan of Sarah Palin, although you do talk about how she's able to really work the television, and you were a fan of her speech at the Republican National Convention.
I thought the speech was great, and I thought that debate the other night last week after those terrible interviews, she was fabulous in that debate in terms of pure political ability to come forward and ignore the moderator, Gwen Ifill, ignore Mr. Biden, mm-hmm. and look at the camera and say, hi, this is who I am, this is what I want to say. There was a certain political mastery there that actually took me aback. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. What about the substance behind that?
Oh, it bopped all over the place, I think. I am not a fan. Every media professional in America will tell you, when you are asked a question that you don't want to answer, change the subject. Say, thank you so much for asking about economic policy, and I do want to talk about it, but mostly I want to talk about the war in Afghanistan and my views on that, and then just go and do Afghanistan. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
I sort of think that's a horrible way to do it. I think you got to politely work your way through all interviews, and if somebody says, I heard you wear terrible shoes, and they're the least fashionable shoes in the world, and you look like a fool, you got to address that. You know, you got to say, okay, fine. Maybe my shoe taste isn't so great. That's a silly example of what I mean, but I think you ought to answer the question. I don't think Mrs. Palin, I don't like the way she would pivot off the question into wherever she wanted to go. I think that leaves people who are listening feel vaguely unsatisfied. All candidates do it now because all media advisors tell them that's the way to do it. I don't like it so much.
Right.
I'll probably have more thoughts on Mrs. Palin. I watch her very closely.
I'm sure you do.
On the campaign trail.
And so does Tina Fey. And I know you've said, isn't it as true to spoof someone that well? You've said to utterly nail a political figure while not brutalizing him or her takes a real gift and amounts almost to a public service. It is amazing how many people have watched that, how their numbers have shot up. And I'm sure that maybe at some subconscious level it would do Tina Fey a world of good to have Sarah Palin elected, right?
Uh-huh. Well, in a professional level,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Exactly.
Well, Tina Fey isn't going to be without work in the next 4 years anyway.
You're right.
But will she have even more work? Yes. Do you ever watch her on 30 Rock?
I haven't seen the show. Is it good?
Oh, it's fabulous.
Is it?
It's unillusioned. It's cynical isn't quite it because that makes it sound sour, but it's unillusioned and unromantic and hilarious about modern media life. And I had wanted for a while to write about Tina Fey because I find her career and her gift so interesting. But with Palin now, she's actually become, in that old-fashioned phrase, I'm not sure people say this anymore. They used to say it when I was a kid. She's become a national sensation on every computer in the United States and probably England. The marvelous Tina Fey, Sarah Palin.
Right.
As I said when I wrote about her, the thing that is delicious is that she observes life closely. And even Tina Fey, she
right.
observes it so closely that she can capture it and give it back in a imitation of somebody. And even though she always, on 30 Rock and in many other moments, plays somebody who's very stressed and rather sour, I actually think the ability to capture some reality and capture it so beautifully takes a kind of love. And it's beautiful when you see that. It's
mm-hmm.
just great in whatever part
exactly,
of life.
Exactly, and whatever, wherever you see it. I know I was a huge fan of West Wing, and I know you were a consultant for West Wing, and I've been looking for a program to replace it ever since. That would replace political conversations, too, once the election is over. So is 30 Rock the show? Should that become my regular show?
Since so much of America is modern media, yes. It's not politics in the way of West Wing, but it's only a half hour, and it's not a drama. But my goodness, it captures some of the sort of anarchy of modern life.
Hmm.
West Wing, I thought, the most beautiful thing about it was not only that it elevated politics as something, it actually taught young people politics is interesting. You might consider watching it more closely. It had a very typical standard liberal bent because it's fabulously creative creator and writer, Aaron Sorkin, is a liberal. So you had to watch it knowing if you were a conservative, it could get on your nerves. But if you were a conservative, knowing this is a liberal's view of reality, you could just jump in, filter past some of that stuff, and get down to the lovely evocation of working in a White House for a president of the United States and dealing with the great questions and happenstances of the day. I also thought it was, I told Aaron this once, I thought West Wing was beautifully romantic about adulthood, about how you could grow up and become an adult, and as an adult, care about things and take part in the world around you.
It
was like saying, to me, it was like saying to teenagers, oh, this is going to be fun. Hold on, stay in school. This is going to be great. You're going to wind up on Air Force One and have a ball with some guy who you believe in.
I'll use that at the dinner table with my son tonight, who is almost 17. You know what life is like these days. Let's go to more phone calls. Peggy Noonan is our guest, and her book is Patriotic Grace, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. It is our gift to you for pledging during this hour as well at the $120 level. And our number is 888-202-2552. Todd from Green Bay is next. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, Todd. How are you?
Great. I like the last question, too, of the first caller. And Peggy, with all due respect, you're in Wisconsin now, so you're going to get some tough questions at you. But
go ahead.
Bottom line is, you know, I really have a hard time. You know, it's great that you're coming up with this point of view now, but if people have followed you like I have for the last 20 years, you've really been more a staunch conservative. And my point is, when Ronald Reagan came in and said that government is the problem, when my mom's from Italy, do you know how many people risk their lives to swim over across the land in little boats. They didn't even know where they're going. And they finally wrote this great constitution, We the People. And then the Republican comes in and says, government's the issue. That means I'm your leader and I hate our government. And I just think that's awful with Saddam having palaces with moats and water, just like the moats and the drawbridges, and supply-side economics and deregulation. Now all of a sudden Republicans are against deregulation. I just think it's so obnoxiously hypocritical. And for you to start off, I've heard that story now for about five times, almost fearing scaring the country. You know, I agree, your book is probably great now. You've turned the page a little bit here, but how can you just wash your past history away, and how can you embrace those types of policies?
Well, you're bringing a lot of ideas and thoughts forward. I'm not sure to start, but let me start here. I am still a conservative. I make it clear in the book. I am a philosophical conservative. I don't think politics should get low and nasty, but I appreciate, as I say in the book, that it is a fight. It is a struggle, because in our political life in America, we're working out issues and questions of justice every day. What's more just to the American people? What's the best, most prudent, most helpful thing to do? That takes a fight sometimes. And the answer is not always a sort of mushy bipartisanship. Sometimes Congressman Smith thinks A, and Congressman Jones is certain that the answer is Z. The answer is not always M. Do you know what I mean? It's not always in the middle. Sometimes you got to fight it out. But that's fine. But you want to do it at a certain level and within a context of understanding what time it is in history. As for Mr. Reagan and his newly controversial words, which he said over and over again in the 1980s, government is not the answer, government is the problem. Look, you love your country. You love America. You love the freedoms that we have codified in our Constitution. You probably love debates over parts of the Constitution and what they were meant to mean and how they are interpreted to mean now. But you cannot say that government is this beautiful, romantic, pure thing. You know it is not. Government can be used as pure force. Government can get out of line. Government can be unfeeling bureaucracy. Government can take too much power to itself. Government can take too much money from you and money from your neighbors and declare that the government will use it better, and it turns out the government doesn't use it better. The government is an instrument that we use in America that sometimes works well and sometimes does not. In Ronald Reagan's era, the government was clobbering regular people with taxes. And I mean regular people with blue-collar jobs. They, in those days, not now, but in those days, they were badly clobbered with taxes. Government was taking that money and going off on its own toots very often with regard to how to spend it. The federal government was keeping more money than it was giving back to the states. It was really kind of a mess. I think Reagan was totally right about that, and I still am not in love with government. Government is something we need and something we have to continually watch and monitor. You know, it's one of the things we ought to be doing. On, we got a big crisis now in our economy. Is the government not at least partly to blame for that? I think it is, through government programs. So I would say don't fall in love with government. Don't think it's such a wonderful thing. Do your best with it. Try always to improve it. But, you know, our founders didn't love government. They just knew we had to have a government. They also knew it would be populated by human beings. And human beings are, by definition, imperfect.
And
human beings in power are even more imperfect.
You're right about the need, though, being horrified by what you were seeing in New Orleans, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, when we certainly did need government, didn't we?
Absolutely. But here's one of the things. We ask so much of government and obsess so much on it and demand so much of it. You know, it sounds fine. And then you find, you know what, on the essentials, on the simple essentials that the government ought to be capable of doing, it's not even capable of doing that. This government was very badly run and badly managed, as was shown in Katrina. They were incapable of helping people who were literally drowning. The mm-hmm. waters were coming up. It was just a terrible, terrible thing. And the Bush administration suffered for it, and rightly so.
Yeah. Let's take more phone calls. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Ron from Wapaka. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
Hi.
I think most Democrats and liberals, of which I am both, would be advised not to buy into this reconciliation bit because of Lee Atwater and Newt Gingrich. Lee Atwater said reconciliation is only when the GOP is losing. Win by any means, then apologize.
I don't think you adhere to that philosophy, though, Peggy, do you?
Mm. No. No, I'm not even sure Lee did. If you say Lee Atwater said that, I'll believe you, but that's something I've never heard. But, however, I don't think you ought to be a liberal Democrat who says the locus of all evil in the modern world is the Republican Party. Don't think that the Democrats aren't up to mischief, too, and hardball politics and hardbar strategy and tactics. It happens on both sides. You could argue, well, that's okay. We could afford it in the 60s and 70s and 80s. My thought, we can't afford it now.
You talk about the fact that, and I want you to detail this some, you talk about this election going to be the greatest political drama of our lifetimes, that you've never seen a political year like this, and
never.
That there's incredible skepticism from the American people about Wall Street, which is understandable, toward Washington, which is understandable. But at the end of the day, somebody really has to lead.
Yeah. I feel like we have a bit of a leadership vacuum going on now, actually. Putting Obama and McCain aside, something's wrong about Washington. I think it's why, you know, we have witnessed, we have lived through in the past few weeks a most remarkable occurrence in U.S. history. The sitting president of the United States, a Republican, the Speaker of the House, a popular one, Democrat, heads of both parties in Washington on the congressional side, in the House and in the Senate, Secretary of the Treasury, they all came forward. They said, America's in a terrible crisis, and if we do A, B, and C, we're going to really make some distance in solving this thing. So please support A, B, and C, because we all are. Your establishment is. And within about 24, 48 hours, the phones began to ring in Congress, and the American people said no. And that's why the first bailout bill failed. It was a real repudiation, a real snub, in my view, of Washington leadership. So one of my hopes for the future is that we are quietly, in America, growing leaders who are stable and serious and effective on the ground, state by state, and that these younger leaders in their 30s and 40s will come forward as the leaders of the future. After all, it's my friend Mr. Reagan, he was grown in California, and he came in a great whoosh and, to my mind, saved the day in 1980. But he didn't come from the Washington establishment. He came from America.
Mm-hmm. Ron, thanks for the call. Tom from Waupaca is next. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Peggy. Just kind of... we're commenting on what I wanted you to speak about. You know, I grew up in the 70s. I became a voting age in the late 70s. So I saw the Carter years and then when Reagan came in. And I have to say that I'm mostly a moderate. I guess I was kind of a Reagan Democrat because I thought when Reagan came in, he was in a really bad position to be the president, but he really, I thought, did a very effective job of bringing the American people together. And whether you were a Republican or Democrat, you couldn't deny the fact that Reagan showed a lot of leadership as our president. And I guess what I'm wanting you to comment now about is that although Obama gets a lot of criticism for him being short on experience, as you mentioned earlier, I think maybe that's what the American people are looking for now is a change in direction and not necessarily somebody who's been in Washington for 25 or 30 years, but somebody that we can just rally around.
Yeah, that's so interesting to me. There's something's going on in the past few years. I think Americans are so disenchanted isn't the right word, but so turned off by Washington. I'm not sure they were ever enchanted, but they're just seriously turned off now. They're so turned off by Washington that someone with no Washington experience seems like a good idea. Well, that's okay, but someone with no experience or very limited experience, we should draw a line there. I'm not sure that's a really good idea because that means we're relying on the magic of a human being, you know? Obama, Sarah Palin, they don't have that much political experience, never mind Washington experience. They don't have that much political experience compared to, say, previous American leaders and presidents. It's foolish for us to think that that is a qualification, that they don't have much experience. It leaves us hoping that they have magic, as I say. But it's a commentary on Washington that almost, if you have no Washington experience, that's a major plus. But again, that shouldn't be translated into, if you have very limited experience, that's a major plus. I happen to think I'm old enough now. Experience is a good thing. You know, it's how we learn. It's how I've learned. Magic does happen. And great natural leaders who came from nowhere, that really does happen. But it's rare, and it's a slim reed to lean on, I think.
Who was I reading in the last couple of days who was so impressed, who looked at Obama's experience and was concerned about that, but also was incredibly impressed by the people who are surrounding him. Who wrote that? Would you agree with that?
Do you want to know something? I am impressed by the people around him. It seems to me he has good, solid, intelligent people around him. There's also something, let me mention something very small and maybe not that significant, but it matters with me. They're very nice. Hmm. You know, mm-hmm. You meet up with them because I'm out there selling a book and I'm doing interviews and it's a political year, so I go on TV. So I meet them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I like them. They are nice people. They are not low sorts. That's how they strike me.
Peggy, thank you so much for being with us. You're one of those people I listen to, which, you know, I think is a compliment. I listen to you. I don't listen to everybody, but I listen to you.
Kathleen, thank you so much. I hope we can do this again. I didn't realize how late it was.
Yeah.
I'm here banging away. I guess, my goodness.
Thanks, Peggy.
I hope I can do it again. Thanks
yes,
a lot. And I hope everybody does call in and give you the money that you need.
Thanks, Peggy. We hope so, too. And they can do so right now. And with our thanks to you, we're happy to send a copy of Peggy's book, which I know you're going to like. Those of you who love politics, those of you who are looking for a different way, that's what the book is about. And she's a lovely writer. Patriotic Grace, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. Patriotic Grace, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. Peggy Noonan, our guest this hour on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peggy Noonan, our guest. It was I knew she'd be a delight to speak with, and we were happy to have her with us. Patriotic Grace is the book, What It Is and Why We Need It Now. And she asked even people to pledge. You know, it's frequently we come to the end of an hour and people say, thank you for your great listeners. And they say that to us all the time. She said she'd be happy to come back. I believe her. She will. We thank our guests for being on the show, and they thank us for listeners who obviously care about all of these issues and ask such intelligent questions. They have done other shows in this country. They know that Wisconsin Public Radio listeners are a special group of people. So thank you for being intelligent, active listeners, for disagreeing respectfully with people, for being good people at your core, I think. And also thanks for your financial support, which makes all of this possible. If you haven't pledged yet, please just go online at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552. We have a goal this hour of $3,000, which I believe we'll be able to raise if you give us a call. We're at $2,280 right now with 8 new callers or pledgers. Thank you very much. $2,280, and the goal is $3,000. So we ask you to call right now, toll-free by phone at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Rhonda Fanning, producer of this program, is in studio with us now. Hello, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Rhonda.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. And our goal is getting closer and closer
yes,
to that $3,000 level. So
yes,
I want to thank everyone who's called so far. But we still haven't reached that goal. We have about another $800 left, and that's only a couple of calls at that $120 level. And at that level, you'll not only receive the Wisconsin Public Radio membership card, but you'll also receive a copy of Peggy's book, Patriotic Grace. And she was a great guest.
She was.
Of that show, which doesn't happen very often. So keep those calls coming at 888-202-2552, or you can log on to WPR.org.
A gift to Wisconsin Public Radio is a gift for what we do on the air, but also behind the scenes. And it still costs money, as you know, to keep our phone lines going, to talk with our guests, to talk with you, to listen to the news. Your support helps Wisconsin Public Radio stay current so that the programs that you depend on are brought to you seamlessly. Pledge now securely online at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And really, when you think about it, a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio service, but so many others who can't afford to support it. So make your pledge, not only for yourself, but for those individuals and for the community. Online at WPR.org or give us a call at 888-202-2552.
Be as Patty from La Crosse, and who has pledged and called in with comments. I appreciate the program, and I always learn something informative and intelligent that I've never heard before. That's a pretty priceless thing to have in your lifetime every day, an important part of your lifetime, I'm sure. Just this hour, $120, and we are happy to send you a copy of Peggy Noonan's book. I guarantee you will like this book. She is a lovely writer. She is probing the difficulties that we're facing right now and calling for people to come together. She is worth a read, certainly. Patriotic Grace is the book, what it is and why we need it now, and we need you have you pledge now. We'll send that to you. 888-202-2552 is our number, 888-202-2552.
That's right. How different would your day be if you couldn't catch your favorite programs, be it Kathleen or Joy or Ben, each and every day here on Wisconsin Public Radio? If it would, make a contribution to keep the quality of this service strong. Online at WPR.org, or you can call toll-free 888-202-2552. And we keep creeping up to that $3,000 goal. We're still about $600. So a couple more people need to pick up the phone, pledge at that $120 level. Oh, we just jumped up. So we're about $500.
All right, let's go.
Thank you. And receive a copy of Peggy's book.
Thank you so much, Rhonda, for producing this program. Thanks to Peggy Noonan for being with us for a good chunk of the hour, and to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. She'll join us again, and we'll have another good conversation. Help us reach that goal of $3,000. We're at $2,570, so you could help us go over. We'll hear the news and return. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.